You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk, Shane Combs, Matt Combs, and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SBC fans, and welcome to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk podcast show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, coming to you another week here as we basically get to the end of golf, but just starting league play and football, and then a halfway point in volleyball. The fall season kind of overlaps, and it's kind of fun to give the different sports attention at the different times. Fans, we obviously want you to get involved. You can do so at the DBK Media Services. They offer so many different ways for us to do that. The phone number 740-569-3254. Call, leave us a message, any question, comment. Let us know what you'd like for us to talk about on some upcoming shows. Well, this week, Matt, Jeremy's not able to be with us. Obviously, throughout the fall, it's usually three of us kind of sharing some different opinions. But Matt, I wanted to welcome you to the show and ask you something that I got thinking about Friday night. I was out watching Uniota Paint Valley, and they had the 1993 team back there at Uniota, and gave me a chance to run into some of my what would have been some of my older teammates on the basketball side. They had the 93 football team back, but a lot of those guys were teammates of mine, teammates of yours. Me being a 95 graduate, those were some guys I played with more freshman, sophomore year. But as I got a chance to talk to them a little bit, it got me thinking. With reunions, Matt, you go 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, and so on. With your classmates, it's one thing. But you graduate in a class, depending on what school you go to, maybe 140, 150, 160 kids. Some of the smaller schools, obviously, wouldn't be that much. But I got to thinking, there's something about your teammates beyond classmates. There's something about that smaller group, those special teams you play on. Obviously, if you win a championship or do something really unique, your place in history with those guys is always there. But it could even be a team that you go 6-14, 7-13, whatever. It's just something about teammates. I know you've been with some special groups, some guys that you continue to be friends with, you know, 20, 25 years later. Talk to me a little bit about that special bond and what it means to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're teammates with somebody, you know, really you end up spending so much time with them, you know. I mean, even more so maybe than your classmates or even your best friends, you know, in school that you don't play sports with or whatever. You spend so much time with a teammate, really, when you're involved in a sport, and you spend time with that person in a, you know, with a wide range of emotions going on, you know, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat, so to speak, and everything in between. And you just build, like you used the word bond, I guess that is the best word. You just build such a bond with them. And a lot of times, you know, when you get a chance to get together with those people 15, 20 years later, it's almost like, you know, nothing's ever changed. You just sit there and start talking about, remember this game? Remember this? You know, it's like it just happened yesterday. So it's a lot of fun. I've had the opportunity to, you know, to have a reunion with the 1991 Uniota Sherman team that went to the state finals that I was a part of. And anytime we get together, I mean, a couple of those guys, I'm still friends with and talk to quite a bit, but a lot of them have moved way out of town now, so you don't see much. And obviously everybody's got their own lives or careers or families. So when you get a chance to get back together again, that's always a lot of fun. And I think for your diehard fans that have been coming to games for years and years and years, it's neat to see those guys too come back. And so I think whenever a school does that, it's a pretty special thing.
Well, Matt, I'll even throw in some coaching. I think some of these same connections are made from the coaching aspect. As you know, we're starting to get old enough now to where people we've coached have gone on and started to have families and getting into their careers and what they're going to do in life. And I know when you're into the season, if you take a Monday through Saturday, if you take your awake hours, you're probably almost tripling, almost quadrupling the amount of hours you spend with your players compared to your family in a lot of ways. And I think some of that same connection can be made in coaching with some of your teams. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, there's no question. I think as a coach, and really as a coach or a player, but I think especially as you get older, you start to value these relationships more. You know, as a coach, you really enjoy seeing the kids that you've coached grow up and go on and do something with their lives. And if you get a chance to get together with them later on and find out, you know, how's their career going, how's their, you know, how many kids do they have, what are their kids into, you know, where do you live now, those types of things. It's fun to see kids that maybe you had some small part of helping shape them, see how they've ended up. And I've gotten the opportunity over the years to get to do that with some of my former players. And like you say, it's that probably honestly is one of the most rewarding things as a coach.
Well, Matt, the SVC has a group of girls and really a group of guys, perhaps in the midst of one of those special seasons that we're talking about. But first, we talk golf as our first fall champions have been crowned. Our first fall champion has been crowned as golf is the first on the schedule to come to a conclusion in the regular season, that is, and it's the Uniota Shermans on top for an amazing 14th time. This is their 13th outright title, and you know, you've only been playing golf 21 years now in the SVC, and to think this is Uniota's 14th title, that's just phenomenal. Sam Calvin, Hunter Brown, Trent Hudson, Scott Freeman, Cole Cottrell, Bane Atkins. Nice group of players, really consistent throughout. A lot of contribution from all six spots of the lineup, and Coach Drummond just continues to make an amazing thing go. And you look back through history, other than the 03 through 06 stretch at Piketon where they had that incredible run, a 95 Huntington team, the Newland kid was phenomenal, McGill and Irvin there later in the 2000s. But for the most part, from start to finish, this has been a Uniota-dominated golf league. And, Matt, I want to take you back to August 22nd, SVC match number two, out at Valley Vista. And Uniota, not that they were beaten, but I think a lot of times as a coach, you know this, when you feel like your kids – do not play up to their ability. It's one thing to go out and shoot really good scores, and in a sport like golf, someone just shoots better. But on that particular night, for the talent of Uniota to post 174, they finished fourth that night. And to be honest, when I look back at it today in preparation for the show, they're lucky they didn't finish sixth because they almost let a couple other teams get them. I know I happened to be out on the range. I told the story on the show back when this happened. I happened to be out on the range the next day out at JC's, and just knowing Coach Drummond the way I do, his demeanor, his approach to practice, you could tell it wasn't about wedge game and driver and, you know, what are we doing here? It was really about just maturity, approaching the match with a competitive spirit and really bulldogging your way through a round. And when I look at Coach Drummond, I think of the expectations and the consistency, being someone lucky enough to play for him. I just think that he's played a really big role in this particular race this year. Matt, talk to us a little bit first before we get a little bit more detail just about Coach Drummond, what he means to you and what you think he means to SVC golf.
Well, I think a lot of credit, you know, has to go to Coach Drummond with this. I know, obviously, you know, when we start talking about coaching, I think sometimes – you know, coaches get in certain sports probably get a little too much credit, and in certain sports, like in this case, probably don't get enough. You know, I think a lot of people just are quick to say, well, you know, in a sport like golf, or even take a sport like track, you know, your fastest kids in track or your best golfers in golf, they're naturally going to rise to the top and win the league or win their individual events or whatever. And there's some truth to that. I mean, you know, obviously, I think Coach Drummond would be the first to tell you, you know, he hasn't won 14 titles in 21 years by having bad golfers. You know, I mean,
right.
He has talent. He's been fortunate to be able to have some kids who are good players. But at the same time, you know, I think he's taken that talent and helped take that talent to a new level with really his attention to detail and his attention to the mental aspects of the game. You spoke of that match out there early in the year where they finished fourth, you know, and talked about as a coach, how did he react when guys are playing to less than their standards. that was the one thing about Coach Drummond. He's never really been one to accept. You're not going to hear him say things like, well, it's just one of those days, just had a bad day. You know, he really doesn't believe in that. I think he looks at golf as a sport that whatever you shot, you probably could have shot one or two strokes better. You know, how did you manage this situation? You know, what club did you hit here? What was your thinking here? He just doesn't write a score down at the end of the night and say, okay, what is. I mean, he's looking at the details. How can he help a kid? So I think in those terms, and the way the expectations and demands he puts on players, I think he deserves credit for that. You know, he doesn't. And this is the one thing I noticed when I played golf for him 20 years ago, and at that time golf wasn't even a league sport. It was just kind of starting out, really. He never treated golf and like a club sport. You know, just like we're out here to do something, just to get together and have fun. I mean, he treats it like a real sport. And I know people probably think, well, that goes without saying. Well, I don't think it does, because I don't know that everybody does that. But he treats it like a real sport. You're an athlete. You have expectations. You're to be at practice on time. You're to do what we ask you to do. You're to conduct yourself a certain way. And if you don't do it, there'll be consequences. So, I mean, he coaches that way, and I think that rubs off on his kids.
I don't think there's any question, Matt. I know I had a chance to be in the first inaugural season of SVC golf. That was back in 1993. You can go to our golf history page and see all the past champions. I will say this as a quick reminder. SVC fans have heard me say this before. Whenever you're on one of our history pages of fall sports, keep in mind that 1993, the fall, was the first season. But that was actually the 1994 senior class. So when you start trying to think back, who was a senior that year and so forth, remember it's always that next year's class. So like the 93 season was your 94 seniors. And as I was on the first two championship teams there in 93 and 94, everything you're saying, Matt's so true. Obviously we had some golf talent, but he was always so good about being able to connect maybe your favorite sport to this particular sport. I can remember one time I made an 8 on a hole, and I can remember just Coach Drummond, you know, he's never one to yell at you or get on you or whatever, but I can just remember him saying to me, well, Shane, at some point you probably just stop competing on that hole if you're honest with yourself. How hard would it have been to make that a 7 or a 6? And all of a sudden that round of 43 would have become a 41 or 42, and that's a little bit what you're saying, that consistency. And I guess, Matt, the next thing I wanted to ask you is on that same line. Let's even back away from Uniota Golf and just talk sports in general. So many things nowadays, and this is really all level of sports, the coaching turnover seems to happen so quickly. The fact that someone like a Coach Drummond in Uniota Golf, or a Coach Smith in Adena Volleyball, or, you know, Coach Hall in Paint Valley Football, has been there so long, and there's such a consistency throughout the community, throughout the school. I know Uniota has Little League golf program. They have junior high golfers. I heard Coach Drummond on the show the other night, the scoreboard show on WKKJ, talking about all the people he wanted to thank at the lower levels. And what does that mean in today's time, or really any time in general, that when you're able to avoid the coaching turnover and give a school and give a program a sense of that consistency?
Well, it means everything, because I mean that's the whole point about building a program. You have when you start talking about coaching turnover, I think it probably happens for a couple different reasons. I mean, one, you know, sometimes schools, you know, I guess for lack of better words, fire or non-renew their coaches and move on to something else because they think, well, this person isn't doing a good enough job. We want it to go in a different direction. But a lot of times the coaches themselves say, this isn't for me. I've had enough. You know, I'm moving on. And I think some of the coaches you just named, Coach Drummond, Coach Smith, Coach Holland, they've been around a long time because they've done a nice job and their schools have been happy with them. But at the same time, they've stayed around, I think, because they're at schools that make commitments in those sports. You know, those schools support those sports and make a commitment to winning and make a commitment to them having a good program. Like you say, they support those coaches in having peewee programs, you know, and they support those coaches in allowing them to run their program the way they see fit. And I think whenever a school makes that type of investment in a coach and that type of commitment to a coach, I think that coach is more likely to stay in it for the long haul. You know, they feel rewarded, so to speak. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely. And, you know, when you talk coaches and you talk some of the improvements in let's go back to our golf here. Coach Drummond, I think, is one of those ambassadors of the sport, and he's helped the sport grow. And, you know, I can remember going back to that 93-94 stretch that I'm talking about there. There was 5-6 established teams. A couple other schools were throwing in some individuals, or they might throw 4 people together just to make a score. Well, now you look this many years later, and the amount of talent across the golf league is phenomenal. And I think sometimes I don't even realize that until I see some of the scores coming in from other schools and some of the invites and things like that. But our player of the year, Paint Valley's Tyler Thompson, and he edges out Southeastern Eli McKee and Uniota Sam Calvin, even some of the young kids at Piketon like Graham and Moore. You know, were right in the mix all year long. But, you know, Matt, I know you had a chance to see Tyler's game earlier in the offseason. Tyler's really come a long way from last year, this year, knocking off 4, almost 5 shots around. And what I thought was so neat, all the way down to the final round, Eli and Tyler started on opposite sides there on Friday up at Pickaway County. And, you know, it wasn't like Eli lost the POY race. I mean, the kid goes out and shoots 35 on his first 9, closes within, I want to say, 223 to 222. So with 9 holes to go in the year, it's just a 1-stroke advantage. And, you know, Tyler obviously comes to the easier side there on the front, and he answers with a 34 to win it. But I just thought it was a neat race. You're talking about two incredible young men. They handle themselves and represent their school in the right way. And when you look beyond Uniota, you see the talent at Piketon I talked about. Obviously, Adina was in this thing up to about SVC match number 6. They have a lot coming back. I just think it was a really good year for SVC golf in terms of having different storylines at all 8 schools. You know, Matt, I know you do a lot of our stat work throughout SVCSportsZone.com. So even though you may not know some of these kids personally, I know that you are able to recognize the names and you follow them all through all 8 matches and see how they rank and move up and down. What's some of your reaction on the individual side of the POY race in all league?
Well, I think, Shane, you know, we talked about at the beginning, I think on one of the podcasts at the beginning of the year, that this player of the year race in golf could go down right down to the wire. And it did. I mean, obviously you just mentioned that it was going into the last 9 holes. There was a total of 1-stroke difference between the top 2 guys. And really some other guys, like you talked about, Sam Calvin especially, was right there in the mix, right up to the final day of golf, so to speak. So, you know, it was a heck of a race. You know, give credit to Tyler for finding a way to get it done. You mentioned, you know, I had an opportunity to play some golf with him this summer one time and get to meet him. He seems like a really nice kid. Obviously, you can attest to the fact that he's a great student, I know from what you've told me, and obviously a well-rounded athlete. So, you know, credit to him. Hats off to guys like Sam Calvin and Eli McKee, too, for quite a great season. Obviously, in Calvin's case, led his team really to the championship. There's a lot to be said for that too. So, great race. Like you said, some good kids coming back. So obviously, the quality of golf in the SBC is just going to continue to be good.
Let's talk about next year, Matt. I mean, as I look through this Uniota Championship roster, Calvin Jr., Brown Jr., Freeman sophomore, Cottrell sophomore, Atkins sophomore. So really they just lose Hudson. And it's probably one of those things where the rest of the SVC is not very happy to hear me say that. So it's one of those situations. I think this is the quality of a great league. We're starting to see it in volleyball over the last decade. Is the Uniota golf programs not coming back to you. So the only option you have is to go get them. And I think that's what sets a bar and makes for quality, quality product throughout Southeast Ohio. So let me ask you this, Matt. In golf, if there's going to be kids like Potensky at Westfall, Miller at Adina, along with Cooper at Adina, Arnold, Zane, Trace, I mean, there's a lot of talent coming back. For a team to get over the hump, when you start talking improving at the game of golf, what is it that brings you from, say, a 55 to a 48, and then a 48 to a 41, and then making that tough jump like Tyler did this past offseason of, say, 41 down to being able to shoot the par rounds or 37, 38? How much can you do this in 1 year, and what are some of the keys that you would tell a young golfer?
Well, I think it depends on the talent level. You mentioned, you know, dropping your score from a 55 to a 48. Well, and that, if you're shooting in the mid-50s, chances are, you know, you're probably just not a really good ball striker to begin with. You're hitting a lot of bad shots. When I say bad shots, I mean chunking them, thinning them, you know, really hitting some shots that get you in trouble. So a lot of times, when a kid becomes a better ball striker, maybe just by going out and hitting balls all year long, just getting a year older and a year more used to the competition, a lot of times you'll see those types of improvements. When somebody shoots those scores, you can see a 6-7 shot improvement on an average.
Right.
Now, when you get down to where, say, a McKee, a Calvin, a Thompson are, a little bit tougher. You know, you're not going to improve 7 shots most likely when you're averaging 37 to begin with for 9 holes. But a lot of times with those guys, it's not so much they're, you know, they got to go out and continue to hone their skills, so to speak, in terms of being a ball striker. But I think a lot of those improvements, maybe being able to improve a shot or so on your average, really probably comes from management a little bit, course management. If I were those guys, I honestly would go back through every round I played, every shot I played. Where did I give shots away? You know, did I give shots away on the green? Did I give shots away? Maybe I didn't have a very good save percentage. Did I struggle out of the bunkers? Did I, you know, did I just make some mismanagement things? You see what I'm saying? You really have to.
Do you think sometimes it's a matter for those guys of trying to be able to take their C minus D plus game and still keep it at 40, 41, not letting the round get away from them? A lot of times if you're a kid that shoots 36, 37.
Well, I mean, I think that's true. And that's what I'm saying. I think really is trying to really, you know, pick out the finer points of where could I have saved some shots? What could I have done differently? It's kind of like being a pitcher in baseball. They always say, you know, as a pitcher in baseball, you're only going to have your A game maybe one out of every 4 times you go out there.
Right.
What are you doing the rest of the time? How do you pitch when you have your C game? Well, it's kind of the same way in golf. You know, there's going to be days where, you know, everything just feels great coming off your club and you really don't even have to concentrate. You just go out there and let the good times roll. But there's going to be other days where nothing feels right and you're uncomfortable over the ball. And how on those nights, how do you compete? How do you grind? How do you save shots? And I think when you start talking about players the caliber of a Tyler Thompson or a Sam Calvin or, you know, McKee, those guys, you know, they're good ball strikers, obviously, and they can play the game. So for them, it's a lot tougher process of really trying to pick out a couple little things they can do to get better.
No question. Great regular season golf coverage for us here on the website. Looking forward to next week talking a little tournament golf. So fans, stay with us as we move from the golf course to the volleyball court, where we had another week of instant classic finishes.
Well, Shane, you know, we had in volleyball some 5-set thrillers this week. Westfall defeated Zane Trace in 5, second time this year. Zane Trace's only 2 losses are, you know, the 2 Westfall matches. You know, we also had a lot of other exciting matches, 4- and 5-set matches. Huntington beating Adina, rather, so now Westfall's up 2 on Zane Trace and Uniota. The league race is starting to take shape. I guess I'll ask you, Shane, because I know you get out and watch a lot of volleyball. The parity in the league, the matchups, just kind of recap some of the things you're seeing.
Well, I know we use these terms on the website, and people are probably thinking, yeah, parity and this and that, and Westfall's undefeated, so it can't have that much parity. But I really think people need to stop and look at the website and go back, go to the volleyball page, and then at the top of the Chris Good sponsored scoreboard, you're going to see our archives. And if you go back to the archives, like I did today in preparation for the show, you're going to find, I think we're 32 total league matches into the year, Matt. We've had 14 matches go 4 or 5 sets, 8 of them 5-set thrillers,
yeah.
6 of them have gone 4 sets. And that's, to be honest, in high school volleyball, that's crazy. Because a lot of times When you're talking about playing to 25, you're talking about the better team's going to get to 25 first. And then, so you might get some four setters, but anytime a match goes five sets, now all of a sudden you're looking at two pretty even volleyball teams. And people have heard me say in the past, you're not going to see very many upsets in volleyball. If you win three out of five, you're better, and or at least better on that night. And as I look through there, I look even at Westfall. Here's Westfall at 8-0, but they've played 3 5-set matches. They've played two more four setters. So out of the eight, they've only been able to win in straight sets, three times. So it tells you right there that there's so much parity and there's so many different matchups that I think that the quality of serving, serve receive, being able to stay on the attack. You have to be able to serve tough while still serving at a high percentage. I know I saw Westfall having three kids, I think, in our top 10 of the Adena Sports Medicine SVC volleyball leaders. And as you look down their stat sheet, they had another one or two just barely missing the top 10. And I think that has a lot to do with it, because if you're serving it out of bounds, if you're hitting it out of bounds, hitting it in the net, shanking a serve receive, if you're giving just 4, 5, 6 points away during the course of one individual set, that's enough to get you beat. So I think efficiency and staying on the attack in some of these matchups, that's just a phenomenal number to me, to see 14 of the 32 matches have needed at least 4 or 5 sets to figure out a winner.
Well, and you talk about, you've talked about what's happened up to now. I guess we have, about 3 weeks left. What, should we expect just to see more of that? Or, I mean, what do you look for, I guess, over the next 3 weeks to end this season?
Well, Matt, I think there's a couple things you got to look at. I think Uniota Zane Trace are getting ready to play what you can just about call an elimination match when it comes to SVC title, with Westfall being undefeated. Obviously, Westfall's got to be looked at in terms of a golden run. They have a week where they're going to be heavily favored, so they're probably going to get to 10-0 before three of their final four matches are really tough. So at 10-0, obviously a Uniota Zane Trace loser being their third loss, probably out of it, maybe a long shot for a shared title. But if I look at Westfall at 10-0, they're still going to have Uniota, Huntington, Adena left. And then I think the way they're going to rank second through fifth. I know some coaches, some fans will tell you, if you don't win the league, second, third, fourth, fifth, what's that matter? But I think that means a lot. So the difference between second and fifth in this particular league this year could easily be one serve, one kill, one serve receive shanked or not shanked. It's just there's a lot of different things to look at. And then I'll even go Paint Valley, Southeastern, Piketon, Matt, because I think it's important for our overall league not to just lose focus of them. Paint Valley's a Division IV team this year, getting better all the time. They're going to have an opportunity in the postseason. Piketon took a set from Zane Trace the other night. Piketon has beaten Paint Valley and Southeastern in five. They've started to have some success in the non-league. And then I know Southeastern's fallen on some hard times here late, but there's still some talent there. And when they play outside the league, you see some of that as well. So I think all the way top to bottom, you can expect to see more longer nights in the gym. Don't show up at a volleyball game and think you're going home in 20 minutes. Right. It's going to be a longer night in the gym. And I think you're going to see some incredible matchups down the stretch here for an exciting finish. Yeah. I tell you what, Matt, one thing I'll ask you before we move on to football, because I thought of this today, and I thought it would be something the fans really enjoy hearing, and you can give such a great perspective. If you're going to go after a league championship, put yourself in Westfall's position, or even if you're in Uniota Zane Trace position trying to stay in this thing, I know one thing you do as a coach is you look at what you call a league. I don't even know what you call it. It's basically your league checklist. And it's your way of kind of keeping kids focused. We always hear the cliche, you got to play them one at a time. And talk to the fans a little bit about how you use that and what kind of success you've had in trying to keep high school kids focused on the now.
Well, when you're in a situation like, say, Westfall is right now and in volleyball, I've always felt like it's pretty easy to keep kids motivated when you're winning, when things are going good. I've always felt like, a lot of coaches will say, I'd hate to play that team coming off a loss, because they expect that team to be angry and a little more focused or whatever. But I'll be honest with you, as a coach, I've always found it a little easier to deal with kids when they're winning than when they're losing. And some people may not agree with that, but I think when a team's lost a couple games, they've taken a hit to their confidence, you know, and sometimes as a coach, that's really hard to get that team to believe, hey, we're okay, we can regroup from this, because if things start going bad again, it's like the here we go again, you know, thoughts come into their heads. Where in Westfall's case, they should be sky high from a confidence standpoint, obviously. You know, things have went their way to this point in league play. So I'm really sure that it's probably not hard to keep them motivated and keep them confident. The focus thing, I think, comes into play, especially in games where maybe you're a heavy favorite, so to speak. Not a lot of people give that team a chance. Those are the games, I think, as a coach, sometimes that scare you, making sure your kids show up to those. But from what it sounds like, this from some of the schedule that you said they have out ahead of them, I really doubt Westfall's going to be taking any of those teams lightly, you know. So I think it'll be probably a little easier for them to stay focused. But, yeah, you know, you mentioned checklist. I think the checklist is just, you know, game by game. You know, in all reality, when you start looking at winning a league championship, you know, what's the difference in terms of in Westfall's case, for instance, between beating Southeastern and beating Zane Trace? You know, I know people are going to say, well, that win against, you know, them beating Zane Trace is bigger. But at the end of the day, they all count as one. You know, they all count as one game to that league. You don't get 1.5 for winning a quote unquote big game. You get one. And so I think that's the thing with kids is will they go into a game where they think they're going to win, not overconfident, not just, you know, going through the motions, but giving that the same attention, living in that precious present. You know, we always talk about of giving the game ahead of you the most attention because that's the most important game. And I think if Westfall can do that, they certainly are in the driver's seat right now with the two-game lead.
Well, it's really good stuff. And you know, we've talked all year long, how will Westfall handle a first sign of adversity, and obviously playing five total matches that have gone 4 or 5 sets, they've had some adversity. But the adversity of losing a match, and I guess from what you're telling me, is the way you handle it, you just don't lose it. You know, take them one at a time and you win them all. But no, that is a really good point. I think, you know, dealing with high school kids, anyone who's coached can appreciate what you're saying there. And that is a nice little you know, analogy to use just to kind of keep kids focused on the now. So, well, I'll tell you what, let's head back outside, and on the other side of the break, we'll talk football. Week 5 or not, we have a huge game Friday night out in Kinnikinick that could go a long way in determining this year's championship team.
I know that you got an opportunity to watch Paint Valley the other night. I know you've seen him a couple times. There's a lot of excitement out there right now in Bainbridge. You know, well, I guess, you know, let's start off by just that. Well, what were your thoughts on what you saw from Paint Valley?
Well, I'll tell you what, I had a chance to see Paint Valley earlier in the year, but I was working concessions on a baseball night there in the concession stand. And if I'm being honest, you know, obviously when I talk Paint Valley, I'm very subjective, as I've said before, with my relationship with a lot of those players. But at the same time, I try to be very objective on the show. And with Paint Valley being one of the better teams, obviously, we're going to talk a lot of Paint Valley football this year. And I guess before I actually start talking offense, defense, special teams, or whatever, we should say SVCSportsZone.com wants to let Coach Holland know our thoughts and prayers are with him as he lost his father this week. It was a really tough week out in Bainbridge. And, again, I think one thing, Matt, if you know, we're going to look at it sports-wise, I think it's an amazing thing when we talk coaching turnover and we talk consistency. A lot of that has to do with the staff you put in place. And I know Coach Holland would be the first to tell you that, you know, he's blessed to have great people around him and people that can jump in and do the job while he obviously attends to things far more important than a high school football game. And, you know, as I had a chance – I know you and I were out at Valley Vista Saturday night playing in the nightlight, supporting the great Little League Baseball that's conducted out there. And I had a chance to talk to Joe Boggs, offensive coordinator, works a lot of offense there with the Bearcats. And talking to him, I thought he did a real good job of calling the game the other night there at Uniota. And one of the things that it's one thing to have great balance. It's another thing for an offensive coordinator to figure out a way to keep everybody happy and spread the ball around and do a lot of things. And I thought they did a great job of that. And then obviously on the defensive side of things, Coach Cooper plays a real aggressive style and obviously has a lot of athletes flying around. I thought Paint Valley really hit. So on, you know, on opening night, it was what it was because the team they were playing, if I'm being, again, being honest, just wasn't very good. Well, I think Uniota's a football team that, you know, and Matt, you jump in if you disagree. I think Uniota's a team that has some pretty athletic kids, has some okay size.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, yeah.
So, you know, what I saw the other night was Paint Valley, a team that could do a lot of different things. Obviously, Clifford's having a monster year. I think he's found the end zone now 9 times in the last 2 weeks. Anthony and Tegan McFadden do some things with some great versatility. Mason McCloy, a big old 6'5", 6'6", target on the outside, caught a touchdown. And then, you know, Tony Hatfield, here's a kid as a freshman last year, won the 100 in the SVC track meet. And here he is like option number 4 or 5 on the offense, you know, running the ball to the outside and giving him some speed on the edge, E-step on the special teams and as a wide receiver. And then I haven't even mentioned the defense yet. So, as I look ahead to Zane Trace, I've also seen them up close, tried to stand at a lot of different angles on the fence in their McLean week 3 matchup. And I think what makes this such an intriguing matchup as I go ahead to week 5 is who can win up front. Obviously, you know, the Paint Valley skill kids are very, very good. Zane Trace has some good backs of their own. They're getting a young quarterback, you know, the feet starting to get a little wet after the injury to Tyler Henney. So when I look at this matchup, yeah, Paint Valley probably is a slight favor, but I think it really comes down to I haven't seen a team yet that can compete with Paint Valley up front. So is Zane Trace going to be able to come in, stop the run, and then be able to run the football themselves? I really think it's going to be important to see who scores first, who can play with a lead into the third quarter, because I think that's going to have a lot to do with how the game is called on both sides from both offensive coordinators. So I tell you, I wanted to ask you, Matt, real quick. Some say you are who you are by week 5. I understand that. But when you think of it, still a month away, and if you have some young teams and you're trying to improve, is that a fair thing? Or like when we look at a Westfall or Piketon who graduated the house last year, obviously they're going to have every opportunity to play Paint Valley Zane Trace head-to-head. Is that a fair way to look at it, or do you still have to have a little bit of patience?
Well, I think it's fair and unfair both. I mean, I know that sounds like a ridiculously bad answer, and you know, I'm obviously, you know me, I'm not much of a fence sitter, but in this case, I see both sides. I think it depends how you look at it, really. You are who you are probably by week 5 in terms of, you know, what your identity is as a team. Are you a running team? Are you a passing team? Are you a team that plays great defense? And you probably are who you are from an athletic standpoint of, you know, in terms of the kids you have and what they're capable of doing in terms of making plays. But where I don't think that's necessarily a true statement is in terms of execution. You know, I think, like you say, with a young team, you know, you may have an identity and you may know kind of what you're capable of doing, but I would imagine if you polled the coaches, so to speak, and surveyed them in the league, I would think they would all tell you, well, we've got a long way to go yet. We can still improve. We can execute better. We can have less penalties. We can, you know, so that's where it's probably not a true statement. You have half a season left. There, you know, if you don't improve in over 5 weeks, you're probably not, you know, very good, because you should be improving every day. So I think there's a lot of improvement left for a lot of these teams.
Well, Matt, to just kind of piggyback what you're saying there a little bit, you know, the other night, Anthony McFadden, the Paint Valley quarterback, had a situation where he had to leave the game. Not sure, injury, illness, whatever it was. I never did really get a straightforward report. But what's crazy is with their depth there, and this kind of goes into what you're saying about with young kids, you'd never be able to do this. Paint Valley, having so much experience, they're able to plug Tegan McFadden right into quarterback. And even a guy like Nate Yoakum, a great defensive player, he's able on the offensive side to go in and start carrying the ball, have a nice little spin move, and do different things. Isn't that what you get with the experience? And isn't that why you have to be a little bit more patient when you're trying to plug in, say, a freshman, sophomore, compared to having some of the seniors to help some of those freshmen and sophomores along?
Well, I think it is. What's funny about that statement is you're talking about age and experience, and the first kid you mentioned was a sophomore.
I guess I was talking Nate Yoakam as a senior being able to plug in, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
Well, but even those young kids at Paint Valley really aren't young anymore because they played, you know what I mean? They played as youngsters. And so you really – experience doesn't always equate to age, you know. But no, I think you're exactly right. When you have kids – When you have kids that can be plugged in and are ready to play, and when you have that kind of depth, it obviously makes the world a difference, because there are teams out there that are good, but they're only an injury away from having to play a freshman or sophomore who's never played before and quite honestly isn't physically ready to play. You know, when you have people, you know, if you're an Ohio State fan, you've watched two straight weeks of football where they plug a quarterback in and not only don't miss a beat, but just take it to another level. And that's a nice luxury to have. Not very many teams have it, obviously. And the teams that do probably have a much better chance of winning championships, because let's face it, a sport like football, it's pretty hard to stay injury free a whole season.
Yeah, you're right, man. I'll tell you what, you look ahead to this game here, Zane Trace side, Swackhammer and Mettler, they really run hard. I mean, they're very, very impressive. So it's going to be the biggest test for the Paint Valley defense yet. I know that Zane Trace offensive line's really good. Should be a fun one to watch. So, you know, well, Matt, we have reached a point where we will speed things up a little bit. We call it the 2-minute drill. With Jeremy not with us this week, we will have you go first and I will finish up. So let's get right to it. Let's go to the hurry up offense.
What is a somewhat hidden fall headline that we need to start talking more about in 2013?
Well, I don't know, you know, if it's really hidden or not, but I know that at this point we haven't had the opportunity to talk a lot of cross country. I know as other seasons kind of wind down and we get closer to the league matches and the league meets and stuff, we will talk more about it. But I think it's going to be interesting to see if the dominance still continues. Does the dominance still continue for Uniota and boys and Zane Trace girls, or you know, might there be some kids? I have noticed some teams have some, you know, each team seems to have a couple kids that sort of poke their nose into the middle of races and have good times. So is there enough depth in one of the other teams to maybe challenge Uniota or Zane Trace once that SVC meet comes around?
Matt, that's a good selection. I even thought about going soccer for some of the same reasons. I know we talked a lot of soccer in the past, but there's something I really had here, and I'm probably going to make some people upset, and I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying to maybe open up discussion on our football league. I don't know if it's numbers, scheduling, the overall product, whatever it is. I know I enjoy going to SVC football every Friday night, but if I'm looking at it objectively and you look out across Southeast Ohio, we just don't seem to stack up in football the way we do in some other sports. And I guess this has been something I've had people ask me about, and it's kind of hard to put my finger on it. I don't know if it's school size in terms of the, like I said, the numbers. Obviously, Westfall, Zane Trace, we talked about this last week. Some of those schools would obviously have better records if they played a different non-league schedule. So maybe that's part of it. But I just think that's something out there for a little bit of discussion. And if we see if some teams get into the playoffs, and a lot of times, you know, we've had some Paint Valley Westfall teams over the year do pretty well, Piketon at times, Adina at times, but overall, a lot of times you've seen some pretty lopsided scores. It's just something to think about, maybe something fans could call into that 740-569-3254 number and give us some of their thoughts.
Name a fall athlete who has been completely undervalued this fall.
Well, you know, I thought a lot about this, Shane, and I'm not going to name one athlete, but I'm going to give a little bit of credit here to the Paint Valley offensive line. When I see some of the stats that's getting racked up by the running backs, by their offense in general, you know, I've got to think some credit needs to go to those guys up front for the Bearcats. I know. You know, linemen kind of have that, you know, historically, they kind of have that unappreciated role where nobody really knows their name and nobody really gives them much credit. And the running backs and the quarterbacks get all the glory, so to speak. But I'll go ahead and give some props to those kids up front for Paint Valley.
Well, Matt, you we talked a lot about Uniota Golf earlier in the depth there, so I want to go to the ladies' side in golf. Brianna Post of Westfall. I mean, here's someone who's just in the middle of an amazing career, getting ready to cap it off, hopefully with another nice tournament run, not just for herself, but her Westfall teammates. I had some information sent into her on our Herbie Strange Athlete of the Week here a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to share with our listeners. I thought this was just phenomenal. She holds a 4.156 GPA, member of student council. Throughout 2013, this is as of about a week and a half ago, her 18-hole average was 75.5, her 9-hole average was 37.6. So throughout the year, Matt, in some of the 9-hole matches, 37 at Crown Hill, 37 at Westchester Golf Course, 36 at Pickaway Golf Course, 39 at Raintree South, 39 at Foxfire, 38 at River's Edge, and then some of her 18-hole scores, 75 Upper Lansdowne, 74 Crown Hill, which is a tough track, 74 River's Edge. So I just thought that was phenomenal. And on the girls' side, maybe we don't talk enough about it, which could kind of lead back to our number one question here this week as well. But congratulations, Brianna Post, on an incredible career, and best of luck as we get ready to go into the postseason in golf.
After four football Friday nights, who has been the biggest game changer you have watched to this point?
Well, you know, the teams that I've had the opportunity to watch are limited, but I have seen a couple, and the Southworth kid from Piketon kind of jumped to mind. I mean, you're talking about a really big, tall target as a pass catcher, and then obviously a difference maker defensively. You know, I know he had, from what I understand, the other night I think he scooped up a fumble and returned it for a touchdown, if I'm not mistaken. And obviously, as an offensive player, you know, when you get a kid that size, if you can get the right matchup, you've got a 50-50 chance by just throwing it up there somewhere in his zip code and letting him go get it. But I out of the kids that I've seen, he kind of comes to mind.
Well, we talked a lot about the Paint Valley and Zane Trace kids. It would be easy to go with a Clifford or a Mettler or things like that. But I thought with Southeastern off to a 2-2 start, obviously took it on the chin this past week. But from what people tell me, in that week three loss to Wellston, very easily could have been off to a 3-0 start. I thought the Des Perkins deserved a little bit of attention here. When you talk about game changers, I start to think of a Shoemaker kid at Huntington or that Parker kid at Uniota or different things. Guys that, when they touch the ball, they give their team a chance to score points. I mean, get points on the board. Because think of it like this, Matt. If you're outmatched as a football team, you're going to have trouble putting together 10, 11, 12 play drives. Your best chance to score a lot of times is to get your best athletes in space and have them make a play. And I think some of those kids that I'm naming there give some of those teams a chance to do that.
According to SVCSportsZone.com's volleyball history page, since going to the 14-game schedule in 1987, no team not named Adina has won the Golden Volleyball. On a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that Westfall is about to change that?
What if you'd asked me this before the season, that would have been about a negative 3. I didn't think there was any way with this league, the parity, that any team was going to win them all. But obviously there's a chance of that happening now. I mean, you have to give Westfall a lot of credit with what they've been able to do to this point. I'm still going to stick with my beliefs earlier. I have a feeling that somebody's going to get them. But that would definitely, that number would be more up around a 7 or so right now because of what they've done to this point. But there's a lot of volleyball left to be played. They have a target right now on their back. I mean, if even teams that don't think they can win the league, it might make their season to knock them off. So they're going to be getting everybody's best shot.
Well, I'll tell you what, Matt. First of all, the stat itself was amazing. Yeah. Thing when I started to research it, that I guess Adina hogged so many, there wasn't a whole lot of years left to even win the league. But it was a situation where no team other than Adina has done this. So that in itself is kind of an amazing SVC history storyline. As I look at the number on this particular thing, I like your number. I had 7.5 written down. I guess I'm in a position where there's still three really tough roadblocks in front. But, you know, it's a situation matchup-wise with Curry and Phillips and Wallace at the net, as you've heard me say before. I think Arledge and Williams and Tackett and some of the kids in the back row and in the setting positions, those are the kids that were not getting enough credit in some of the preseason talk. Those kids have been tremendous. There's one or two rotations I know you can get Westfall stuck in, but if you don't get them in there, I'm telling you what, they're dominant in about four of their six rotations. So 7.5, 8, somewhere in there. Obviously, it's becoming more and more of a reality. Fans, join us on Facebook, Twitter, Shoutomatic, all sorts of options with svcsportzone.com. Obviously, in the inbox, you can go admin1@svcsportzone.com. And Matt, as we like to do every week, let's look at the inbox one last time. Last week, this was kind of something that was a response to that. Last week, we were talking, a fan wanted to know where do we like going around the SVC facility-wise, be it parking and seating and concessions and gyms and fields. And someone had talked here about a lot of times the favorite school can kind of come down to the schools that do the best job of just preparing the event and setting up the event, be it bands, music, PA. And it got me thinking about a show we did last year where we were talking pet peeves. And when I started thinking facilities and, you know, most of the places in the SVC, I don't mind going. I mean, they all do a pretty solid job. But one thing that got me in volleyball this year, and I've noticed it in times in girls basketball, and it really just kind of rubs me the wrong way on the girls' side, is the way we set the gyms up sometimes. I'm not a big fan of the one-sided gym where we don't pull the bleachers out on the one side. We pull the bleachers out just on the one side, and it just kind of gives the gym a feel like I'm at a scrimmage. Like you know, when I think of some of the best atmospheres I've been in this year, those gyms are not it. I think of gyms more like a Uniota Zane Trace, where they allow the crowd to surround the court a little bit more. And I just think there's even some other issues there in terms of whenever you get into some of these. I've given the stat earlier about the 4 and 5 set matches. You know, if you have a high school kid down on the line being line judge, which that's another topic for another day. But yeah, if you have those down there, it all of a sudden you have some close calls in these 4 and 5 set thrillers, and you have a mixture of two sides all in one. You can start to get some different arguments and some things that just don't make for the correct atmosphere. You know, Matt, now that you've been an AD, Just give me your thoughts on some of this and some things that when it comes to setting up an event, what are some things maybe the average fan doesn't think of? And what do you think of my idea in terms of how we set the gyms up for volleyball and girls basketball?
Well, you know, when you mentioned this to me before the show, and like I said before, we normally don't talk a whole lot of pre-show stuff. You know, we kind of go into this thing with, you know, just spontaneously just for the sake of discussion. But you did mention this to me earlier and it got me thinking. I think sometimes, I mean, I know at Benton County, we always pull the bleachers out both sides for girls basketball, but not for volleyball. And if you ask me why, I couldn't tell you why other than that's just the way we've always done it. You know, I don't know. And if I'm being perfectly honest, I don't know that we have a really good reason for it. I mean, we don't have as good a crowds for volleyball in our situation as we do, basketball. And I know in the SVC, I'm sure, when Westfall Zane Trace hook up, or, you know, Westfall Uniota, Zane Trace, you know, there's probably good crowds in volleyball that a lot of area schools or a lot of leagues don't get. I'm guessing the crowds in the SVC in volleyball are pretty good compared to a lot of leagues. With that being said, though, I don't know if that's reason enough not to pull them out. What's it hurt to pull them out, you know, and pull both bleachers out and kind of set the gym up in a better atmosphere? I honestly kind of tend to agree with you on this. I don't know why schools do it. Probably thinking, well, it's just, you know, less time in cleanup.
Right. And that, I guess that even bothers me more because I guess I just look at it in terms of, if you're going to have the event and you know, there's just a right way and a wrong way to do it. And I think a lot of times, like, I'll give you another example. I was at the football game the other night, the Paint Valley Uniota. I was standing down on the fence talking to, as I said earlier, some people I haven't seen in a while. I noticed Uniota, when the flag was thrown, the official was mic'd, you know, just like you'd see on TV in a college NFL game. You know, it was Mr. Oates, I think, one of the real good officials in our area. He'd come over and he would, you know, call out penalty here. And it was just kind of a nice fan friendly thing. that kind of helped you follow the game, and you knew what was going on, you knew what the call was. And now, if I'm not mistaken, Matt, you guys use that at Vinton County, right? Like a little feature like that, how much cost are we talking? Or is that something easy to do? Is it something you recommend to people who do not do it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty easy to do, and I shouldn't speak for everybody. It, depending on your PA system, I guess, and all that, I mean, the wireless mics that we have are really pretty inexpensive. Just little devices that take a little 9-volt battery, nothing big, you know. They sync on their own to your PA system. So assuming you have a new enough PA system where those kind of things kind of sync up, and the cost of the equipment's not much, we think it's a nice little added touch. We've been doing it in Vinton County for 2 or 3 years now. And we've actually had some schools call us and say, hey, we noticed you do this. You know, what kind of microphones did you buy? We want to go look for them ourselves and that type of thing, you know. But, yeah, I think it's a nice added touch just because a lot of times I think, you know, when a penalty's thrown and maybe people are like, what was that? You know, I didn't catch that. What happened? And it's just sort of a nice added touch. So, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think the games that you go to where there's – it's just – fan friendly and it's almost like an event. I went to a game the other night at Bloom Carroll High School, obviously not a team from around here. I was so impressed with them in terms of football, you know, in terms of the way they ran things. You know, you get there and they've got their crowd is tailgating before the game. They've got RVs out there. It was something. I mean, you know, they're into it. You come in and they've got booths set up selling stuff. You know, it was almost like a carnival atmosphere,
right?
In terms of the perimeter of the field, and I just thought it was really neat—a neat environment to be a part of. And I think when you can do things like that, it really, really makes it fun for everybody.
Well, it does, and it's a good topic. Fans, obviously, every single fan, be it junior high fan, high school fan, regardless of the sport, you visit all the different schools in the area. Let us know what you think here. Let us know who does a good job. What are some things? Obviously, we're not trying to attack any school. We're just trying to look at what are some things we could do to better the overall product that we're trying to put out there in SVC sports. So, again, that number is 740-569-3254. Get involved in the show. Before we get out of here, I want to thank the sponsors, Valero, Chris Good, Adena Sports Medicine, obviously Triple Crown Family Fun Center. That goes without saying. So Matt, I tell you what, as we wrap it up here, until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for Bruce Knox and DBK Media Services, and for you, Matt, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportZone.com, where we are 100% SVC. 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.